Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome to Rico Bronya, episode 493, the New York Mets split a four-game series against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And coming into this four-game series, this is exactly what I wanted. Get a split against the Dodgers, win the season series against the Dodgers, own a potential tiebreaker on LA, whether it's for a number one seed, a number two seed, a wild card spot. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe there is no tiebreaker between the Mets and the Dodgers, but at least put it in your back pocket. And the Mets were able to accomplish that by splitting this four-game series against the Dodgers. And it's funny, after the Mets won game three to secure the season series and secure at minimum a split, and they did that in game three, the one game in this series that you couldn't say could go either way. Game one, game two, game four, flip a damn coin. Unfortunately for us, it went against us twice and for us once. But the one kind of definitive result was a Met victory. And after that victory, and after I went to bed, I woke up the next day, that day being Thursday, and I thought to myself, all right, mission accomplished. The Mets did what they needed to do here. And I am usually not the kind of fan, I don't ever really say this on the Rico, where I say, hey, this is house money. I hate the term house money. It's stupid. There is no such thing as house money. And yet, as a Met fan, I sort of felt that way going into the fourth game of this series, because I do respect the Dodgers. I know how good they are, how good this lineup is. I'm thrilled the Mets were able to, from that point, win 4 out of 6 games and have that tiebreaker. And while every game matters, and you never know, you could lose the division by a game or, you know, miss a playoff spot by one game, so every game in 162 count the same, I did have that feeling going into this Thursday afternoon game of, all right, whatever happens, happens. You know, they lose this game, fine, 2-2, go beat the Colorado Rockies. To quote our good buddy Tommy Lugauer, no biggie. But a lot changed with how the game went. I'd be lying to you if I told you, who cares? They won the season series. It's all good. When you have a 4-0 lead, when you have a million opportunities to break the game open, when you play bad defense, when you mix all of that together, and that's how you lose the finale of this series, it feels like just such a golden missed opportunity by the New York Mets. We'll spend some time on game four. We've already recapped game one of this series, that classic, And if you missed that, just download episode 492 of the Rico Bronya. We did that right as that game ended. The other two West Coast games, I got to tell you, were very difficult to Rico because I used a strategy to get through both of these games that I would advise to anybody. It's a great strategy. Hoff thinks I'm nuts. But what I did was I got home, 8 o'clock at night, had dinner, spoke to my wife, kids are asleep, and then I went to sleep, literally passed out. And both times I said, I'm going to wake up. Like, there's no way I'm just going to sleep tonight. I know the Mets are playing. At some point, I will wake up. So for game two, Tuesday night, which was a horrific loss. So if you were expecting an instant reaction, Rico, you didn't get it because I didn't wake up till midnight. And when I woke up at midnight, I started the game on DVR. And I'm telling you, before we get into these games, I'm telling you, it's the best advice I could give anybody that wants to watch and consume every pitch of a Mets season. Because it is tough to sit there for 3 hours. The commercials are the toughest. So when I started the game at midnight, and now I'm skipping commercials, I'm even skipping mound visits if I need be, there's no downtime to ever fall asleep. So I started the game at midnight. It was a three-hour game. I was done by about 2 a.m. Reasonable. So I get the 3 hours of sleep. I sneak it in. I watch the game. Then I go back to sleep. So it's basically like two big naps to get through the night. And I did the same thing for game three of this series. I didn't sleep as late. I think I woke up at about 11:15, 11:30. Same thing. Started the game on DVR. Never had to deal with commercials. Never had to deal with the downtime. And I was able to get through both of these games. Let's start with the brutal loss. Because I do think that when we break down at the All-Star break, the best wins of the year, the worst losses of the year, however you want to talk about it, I do think that game two of this series is going to be up there because of the tease that was involved. Like, Tylor McGill begins this game in the worst possible way, and he's certainly not helped out by some crappy defense. And Tylor McGill ends up giving up the base hit to Freddie Freeman. He ends up giving the home run to Max Muncy, and Max Muncy has really fixed his season. We have certainly seen that over the days the Mets spent in L.A. But Tylor McGill puts together just a horrendous first inning. And in the worst possible time to have a horrendous first inning because of how compromised the Met bullpen is. And you kind of felt going in, all right, they did make the added roster move of bringing up Brandon Waddell, but this is going to be rough. Like, how are the Mets going to find a way to get to the 27 outs if Tylor McGill is giving up 4 runs in the first inning and his pitch count is already high? Like, this game, and this was the game I started after midnight, I was pondering, wow, I can get through this thing real quick. It's already 4-1. Mets already losing this game. Remember, they did get that run in the first inning on the RBI hit by Pete Alonso, and what a series Pete Alonso had. So you take that early one-run lead. You quickly wipe it away by McGill, kind of imploding, but certainly not being helped out by lousy defense. And you have a game that feels like it's not only going to slip away, and not only is this going to be one of those ugly NLCS-like losses where you're not competitive, but how are you going to get through these 27 outs? And major credit to Tylor McGill. Major credit to Tylor McGill. I know this sounds nuts when we do the Rico on the Man Now star of the series. Tylor McGill's obviously not going to win. He deserves like a nice third-place vote. Because for him to settle down the way he did, in which, think about this, McGill ends up getting through 6 innings. He would only put one more guy on base the rest of the game. And for a guy who struggles to get through 5 sometimes, for him to give them 6 innings after giving up 4 in the first inning and having a very high pitch count and having to deal with that lineup, that pain-in-the-ass Dodger lineup, that was, I would argue, I always say sometimes these pitching lines can be misleading. There are factors that can make a line look a lot worse than it really was and vice versa. Tylor McGill's 6-inning, 4-run performance was one of the best 6-inning, 4-run performances you'll ever see. Because not only does he go out there and pound the strike zone, which was very important, not only does he give them 6 innings when they were so desperate for 6 innings based on the usage of their bullpen, not just the previous day, but the previous few days, but he keeps them in the game. And it gave this Met offense at least an opportunity to figure out the great Clayton Kershaw. and figure out this Los Angeles Dodger bullpen. Now, they didn't figure out the Dodger bullpen. They just merely figured out Clayton Kershaw. And you've got Lindor getting on base with what was a big base hit to start the third inning. You had Soto hitting the home run, which brought them back in the game. Then you have what they did in the fifth inning, knocking Kershaw out of the game with big hits from Pete Alonso and from Brandon Nimmo. And you had not only a game that felt like, it really felt like a loss in the first inning. And I could show you some of the emails we got in the RicoB@gmail.com. I don't want to embarrass anybody, even though it's really not embarrassing. It's just reality. We all thought the game was over. Tyler McGill gives up four runs in the first inning. There's no way he's going to get through six. And so McGill deserves a ton of credit for being able to battle through those six innings and put this team in position to protect the lead, because that's what they were set up to do. Now, the problem is with this Met team at times is when they rally like this, and being down 4-1 early against a future Hall of Famer in Clayton Kershaw, even though he's not the same guy, that is an impressive rally. The problem is, after they took the lead with those hits by Pete and by Brandon, the offense did nothing. You know, I joke about the opportunity. Like, if I would have told you, hey, Tyler McGill giving up four runs in the first inning, he'll put one more guy on base and get through six innings the rest of the game, you would have thought I was nuts. It's kind of what happened with the Met offense after the fifth inning. And what frustrates you even more is that you're facing the Dodger bullpen. Now, they've got some good arms in that bullpen, but one guy they had to hit, and this would be something we would notice in game four as well, is Jose Ureña. When Jose Ureña's in the game, you got to take advantage of it. And they were unable to do that. That was their real opportunity. They needed to add insurance in the ninth inning of this game. They had a runner on second and one out. And unfortunately, it's tough to kill Lindor because he was on base multiple times in this game. But Lindor lined out. And then you had the Luis Torrens pinch hit situation, which I was very mixed about, because the Dodgers go to a lefty. They pull Ureña because I guess at that point, Dave Roberts is thinking, you know what? I got another lefty in this bullpen in Anthony Banda. Let me go to him. Let me get the matchup against Brett Beatty, who is being announced as a pinch hitter for Starling Marte. And when he goes to Banda, I figured Mendy would stick with Beatty. And I lean towards keeping Brett Beatty in this game and saying, all right, lefty-lefty, fine. I'll trust Brett Beatty, who's had some big hits against lefties this season, to come through with that big RBI hit in the eighth inning. Because at this point, the Mets are nursing a one-run lead. They were down 4-1. They rally in the fifth inning. They take a 5-4 lead. They've been nursing this throughout the game. And so you figure, this is the moment where you need a big hit. This is the moment where you desperately need a big hit. And unfortunately, he does go to Torrens, which, again, I lean towards not doing, but I didn't think it was egregious. And off the bat, I thought Torrens delivered a three-run home run. I thought the game was about to be broken open. And it was so important for that ball to go over the fence, because you knew what was happening with this Met bullpen and how Mendy was managing it. So let's jump to that part from game two. You get the six innings out of Tyler McGill. Great. He's clearly done. He throws over 100 pitches. He gave you the innings he needed to give you. Absolutely fantastic. I thought going to Brandon Waddell in the seventh inning with Muncy and Podges and Conforto coming up makes complete sense. You already know, if you're looking at who's available or just assuming who's available, that you're not going to have both Diaz and Garrett. You're not. You're just not going to have it. And because Diaz pitched the previous night, and we talked about this on episode 492 when Garrett wasn't available, that part of the reason why you didn't use Garrett too is so that in game two, you had Reed Garrett. I wasn't even sure if Waskar Brazoban would be available. He turned out to be available. So based on that information and knowing the lefties are coming up and knowing it's the bottom half of the order, going to Brandon Waddell in the seventh inning made complete sense. And credit to Waddell, because you still need to get the job done. He works around a two-out walk, gets the comebacker to get through the seventh inning. Now you've got the top of the order coming up in the bottom of the eighth inning, still nursing a one-run lead. Let's go piece by piece on this. Brandon Waddell cannot come out for the eighth inning. I don't care how short you are in your bullpen. If you have Reed Garrett, and you do have Reed Garrett, Carlos Mendoza made the absolute right choice to say, and how many times have I screamed this on the Rico at times, go to your best reliever against the best hitters, no matter what inning it is. So Reed Garrett in the eighth inning to face Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, and Teoscar is an absolute no-brainer. No-brainer. And just because, well, I got a short bullpen, maybe I can squeeze another inning out of Brandon Waddell. You want to squeeze another inning out of Brandon Waddell with a one-run lead against those guys? That's baseball suicide. That wouldn't make any sense. So I passionately agree with Carlos Mendoza that Reed Garrett was the absolute move to make in that situation with a one-run lead and basically no bullpen. And Reed Garrett performed one of the great Houdini acts you'll ever see. Because Reed Garrett has been so locked in since that Yankee game last month. Walks Ohtani, who the Mets for the most part did a very good job against in this series. Gives up a base hit to Mookie Betts. You get the egregious Alvarez pass ball, which cannot happen. He's over framing pitches. So the Dodgers have second and third and nobody out, with Freeman, Teoscar, and Will Smith coming up. And we saw maybe the best of Reed Garrett, because that was stones. That was balls to get through the eighth inning the way he did, striking out Freddie Freeman, getting the ground ball to third base that turned into the rundown play started by Ronnie Mauricio. Talk a little bit about Ronnie later on. And then striking out Will Smith. It was just marvelous work by Reed Garrett. And to this point, I'm with Carlos Mendoza. Now, I didn't know who was going to be available for the ninth inning. That was the real question. He goes to Oscar Brazoban. And listen, we got to take this. You got a one-run lead. It's the ninth inning. Somehow, after giving up four runs in the first inning, you've watched McGill and the bullpen hand it to the other arm in the bullpen in the ninth inning, still only allowing four runs? I mean, that's magic. And Oscar Brazoban, who is very tough to criticize because he's been so good, gets ahead of Max Muncy 1-2 and makes one big mistake. And Max Muncy is so locked in, he hits his second home run of the game, and the sinking feeling we all had at 1 a.m. when the game gets tied in the ninth inning after you did everything you could to protect that one-run lead for the last eight innings. Not a one-run lead for the last eight innings, a one-run lead for the last four innings, but holding the Dodgers at four runs for the last eight innings, that was a punch in the stomach. Absolute punch in the stomach. And it's the second time this has happened with Oscar Brazoban, where he's been great this year. He's asked to get that save. He's asked to get those last three outs, and he gives up the lead. I appreciate the fact that the game didn't just end right there. He struck out the next three guys. So they were at least set up to give themselves a shot in the 10th inning, and you got Soto, Alonso, and Nimmo coming up. So I'm certainly thinking going into that 10th inning, as disappointing as it was when Brazoban gives up the home run, all right, you're at least set up to get a run. A run. And once you see Jose Buteau is warming up, you also know it's Jose Buteau and nobody else. Like, this is now the Buteau show. And, of course, we saw Jose Buteau a night earlier, where he escaped and got a save. So the Mets are not in a great spot pitching-wise, which is why in the 10th inning, you got to forget getting the run home. You got to score multiple runs, in my opinion, if you want to win this game. And Juan Soto, I thought overall, this was a really encouraging series in L.A. for Juan Soto. Like, his final numbers are just 2-for-13, but he drew six walks. He was on base eight times. He hit the home run in game two, the game we're talking about right now. He actually hit it in the third inning, making a 4-1 game, 4-3 at the time. And he had a lot of swagger, which we'll also get into a little bit later on. So this was overall, despite the numbers not jumping out at you, a decent series for Juan Soto. You can't strike out as meekly as he did. That was a terrible at-bat. Terrible at-bat. It's like he couldn't see the baseball coming out of Tanner Scott's hands. And once he can at least give us a ground ball to second base, and then Pete strikes out on three pitches, it is just curtains. Curtains. The chances of maintaining a tie game after you just missed out on that kind of opportunity, I mean, your chances are nil because think about who you're facing in the 10th inning. Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman with a tired Jose Buteau. But why this game, to me, is going to be up there as one of the worst losses of the year is that if Ohtani, who didn't even get a chance to hit, he was intentionally walked, if Mookie Betts just rips a double on the first pitch or rips a base hit up the middle and the Mets lose, it would suck. It'd be a terrible loss, but you wouldn't get the tease. You wouldn't get that little tease that you have to get on a West Coast. So what does Mookie Betts do? He flies out. Okay. What out? You got a shot now. And Freddie Freeman hits a ball that off the bat, I honestly thought was gone. I thought, all right, there you go. Good night, Freddie Freeman. Game-winning walk-off three-run home run. We'll see you later. And then as Nimmo's going back, and he's turning the wrong way, I'm like, is this ball going to stay in the ballpark? Is Brandon going to have a chance to drag this one in, keep this game tied, two outs? Now, hey, if you can get through Teoscar Hernandez, or maybe not even face him, face Will Smith, we're going to send this thing miraculously to the 11th inning. That's a word I created. Like, it's a miracle. It's a miracle-ly, if you will.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed. You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
And to watch Brandon Nimmo, who's played mostly good defense in left field, mostly really good defense in left field, turn the wrong way, and then see the baseball drop right next to him. You guys remember a game in 2019 where Dom Smith dropped the pop-up in San Francisco? West Coast game. Just that's how it ended. Ended on a pop-up that was dropped. This is not as bad as that, but you got to make that play. And after the game, Mendy's, it's hard. It's a tough play. I'm not saying it's easy. They're freaking major leaguers. He's a major leaguer. He's a good defensive left fielder. He's not Todd Hundley out there. Make the catch. So it added the sting to lose game two like that. It just did. Added a little bit of sting to it. But honestly, I don't think Mendy did anything wrong. I didn't look at the way Carlos managed this thing and had any issues with it. The good news was the bounce back. I thought the bounce back effort was great. We saw it immediately in the top of the first inning in game three after Lindor got hit by a pitch and who knew that would come back and bite him? And then Kiki Hernandez makes a brutal defensive play. Pete Alonso hits an absolute bomb opposite field, two-run home run after Soto drives in a run on a productive out, hitting the ball to the right side. Great tone setter, I thought, for this Met team after the loss of the previous night. It's a credit to this team. That's a bad loss. And that bad loss could turn into losing the series. It could turn into losing the season series against L.A. You have no idea what Griffin Canning's going to give you, considering his last few starts had been mediocre. So again, I go back first inning, a Lindor hit batsman, good luck. An error by KK, good luck. But Soto with a productive at-bat and Pete hitting one over the fence, that's taking advantage of your good luck. That's what good teams need to do. And that's what the Mets did. And then we got the Griffin Canning show. This was so encouraging to see Canning after a couple of mediocre starts and certainly, you know, some pressure now. Paul Blackburn's back, five scoreless innings. Frankie Montas will be activated soon. Sean Manaea is going on rehab. There is no guarantee Griffin Canning is keeping his job. And he goes out there and throws maybe his best game as a Met. He walks one guy. He gives up three hits. He took care of Shohei Ohtani a couple of times, including striking him out looking in the fifth inning. A really in-control performance by Griffin Canning. And probably the most impressive thing he was able to do was, again, Mendy's trying to be careful with this bullpen because it's not fully rested. After the game two loss, Reed Garrett's not going to be available. You already know that. Jose Buteau is not going to be available. Oscar Brazoban's not going to be available. So you're dealing with another short bullpen. And after five scoreless innings and a pitch count of 90, and Canning, who had been so mediocre third time around, Mendy took a risk. And I agree. Again, I agreed with this risk. I don't have a lot of major criticisms of this manager. If you're new to the Rico Bronya, you may say, oh, do you always just support Mendy? No. I'm usually sitting here complaining about every little move. And I love Carlos Mendoza. I've told him that. I love you. But I sit there on the Rico and I criticize most of the moves, not because it's Monday morning quarterbacking, but a lot of times I'm watching the game. I just disagree. But in this case, I thought the situation forced Carlos to have to push Griffin Canning. It's a 3-0 game. So my other thought was, all right, I'm going to give Canning two base runners. If he puts a guy on base, I'll still push him. If he puts two guys on base, I'll take him out. I won't allow him to give up the tying run. I'll allow him to put a couple of guys on base because I'm really desperate to try to steal as many outs as I can, but I'm not going to let it go all the way. And what does he do in the sixth inning? Pitch count of 90 against Betts, Freeman, and Hernandez. He got them all out. That 1-2-3 inning by Canning in the sixth inning was one of the most impressive innings he's thrown all season long, considering the circumstances, considering the pitch count, and certainly considering who he was facing. Absolute great work by Griffin Canning. Jose Castillo gets into trouble, gets out of it, and gives you two scoreless innings. Ryan Stanek gets a scoreless inning. And really, more importantly, Pete Alonso made this game irrelevant because at 3-0, there was a chance we were going to see an Edwin Diaz eighth inning sighting. Because at 3-0, after Castillo gets through his issues in the seventh inning, Mets come up in the top of the eighth inning, up 3-0. The Dodgers are going to have the top of the order coming up in a three-run game, and your last high-leverage reliever you have left, I guess you can include Ryan Stanek, but is Edwin Diaz. So I got so pumped up when I saw that Mendy had Diaz warming up to pitch the eighth inning with a three-run lead, because I thought that was the absolute right move. And Pete Alonso, who hit the home run to set the tone in the first inning, hits the home run to basically finish this game off. Three-run bomb in the eighth after Nimmo got hit and Soto drew his third walk of the game. And Pete Alonso goes deep to turn it into, I don't want to say a laugher because we're never laughing, but into a comfortable victory that allowed Mendoza to not have to use Edwin Diaz in the eighth inning. Huge hit by Pete Alonso. All the while, As this is all going on, Canning's throwing the six scoreless. The Met offense is doing nothing between Pete Alonso home runs. You could really see that Lindor was different in this game. When he got hit in the first inning, second pitch of the game, he was clearly in pain. And at first, I was scared, like, did it hit his ankle? Where did it hit? It actually hit his foot. And he stays in the game. But throughout this game, every time he fouled a ball off, you could see he was in pain. You saw it throughout the entire game. And you even saw it in his performance. He struck out in the third inning on three pitches. He had a little pop-up in the fifth inning. He hit that soft line drive in the seventh to end the seventh inning. And you know what was weird about that soft line drive by Lindor in the seventh inning? His reaction to it was to be pissed off, like he was Jeff McNeil. And it probably, looking back on it, was he was in pain. Now, he was really playing this game through pain. And credit to Lindor. Sometimes you want to be smart and realize it's June. You know, I know we want to beat the Dodgers, but you can be smart about this. But that's the kind of competitor Francisco Lindor is. He was never coming out of that game. He just wasn't. He was going to play through it. And he did. And he looked uncomfortable. And when this game was over, I thought there's no way he should play the finale of this series. And it goes back to something I said earlier about house money, even though I turned out not to feel that way after that game. You won the series or the season series. You got a split. Your best player's limping. He's banged up. This is an off day spot. And so Lindor not only took the off day Thursday, but obviously he's injured. It was revealed he has a broken pinky of his foot. Is that what it is? I think I'm using the term right. And Lindor said it's a pain tolerance issue, and he hopes to be back soon. I think the Mets need to be smart about this going to Colorado. This is a great opportunity for Luis Angel Acuna. It's a great opportunity for Ronnie Mauricio, even though the opportunity is there for Ronnie Mauricio. But I think the Mets have to be smart with Francisco Lindor. But you could see it throughout the game, the pain he was in. The other thing we saw, and I wasn't sure watching this game, because when you watch a West Coast game, I don't know if you guys feel this way. Sometimes it feels like you're in a secret club. How many people are watching it? How many Met fans are sitting there until 1 o'clock in the morning watching a baseball game? So I wasn't sure how much attention the Soto stuff was going to get. And by the Soto stuff, I mean he was having the time of his life. He just was. Between the shuffling, which was clearly back, the staring down of Tony Gonsolin. I mean, he stared him down after, I think it was the walk in the third inning, or maybe the fifth inning. I get them confused. He stared Tony Gonsolin down like Gonsolin was trying to go out with his sister. I mean, it was swaggerific from Juan Soto. And that was cool to see. And then you throw in the bottle game that was going on, Luis Angel Acuna dressing up as a catcher and Starling Marte pretending he's a hitter and Soto being a part of it. And then Soto flipping the bottle and being the one guy to successfully do it. I'm watching this and I'm like, is this going to get a lot of attention the next day? I don't know. It did. I get why it did. Soto is a lightning rod. And I do think that the smiles, not just from the bottle game, but the attitude he has on the field, it's got to remind you of happy Juan Soto. So it's a good sign. I mean, this was not a road trip or a series in which he put up massive numbers, but he was productive. He had a home run. He got on base a lot. And maybe more importantly than all of that, he looked happy. So maybe it does put an end to the story that he's just miserable and he secretly wants to be a Yankee. By the way, Hoff, I know you struggled through these games as well. How do you feel now knowing we're done with the 10 o'clock games? We do have an 8:40 game on Friday, but how was the battle getting through the three consecutive 10 o'clock games?
It was brutal. There was game two, the one that you started at midnight or two?
Yes, what time was midnight. Okay. I started the game at midnight. I ended it a little bit after 2 a.m.
I tried to do the strategy you did, but I wasn't able to take a nap. So I'm like, I'm up at 10. I'm just going to watch the games. And that game in particular, they were catched up to Kershaw. And I think it was Alonso got an RBI single or whatever it was. And then I passed out and woke up at 4 a.m. I was like, okay, I hope I don't have to do a Rico.
It's tough, man. Yeah. Well, luckily, just for the record, there was no text messages I sent to Hoff. Let's do a Rico. I had Tiki Barber in my head because Tiki was like, you do have to get some sleep at some point. So I tried to mix in some sleep. I thought it was good we got the Rico win after game one. I knew going into this four-game series I wanted to do multiples, but I wasn't sure how many we were going to get through. But it's tough. These West Coast games are very, very tough, and there's no perfect strategy. I think my strategy is the best, but I also have this weird tick in me that I can't sleep the full night if I don't know the Met game. Like, at some point, my body is just going to wake me up and say, go watch the Mets. It's a weird thing, but I kind of have it.
Well, it's funny because you were saying too, it's like it's a small community of who's up watching this Mets game right now. It's actually like there's like two different paths though. It's like who's up watching the game right now and who's passed out on their couch trying to watch the game right now. There's a bunch of different layers to this.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's a weird, weird thing. Let's get to the fourth game of this series. This was the Thursday afternoon game. I was on the radio for the first 2 hours of it, and I got to see the conclusion in the car. This loss to the Dodgers, game four of this series, is on the list. It is. It's on that list I make of horrible losses and great wins. Take everything I thought going into this game, house money, we got the season series, we're all good. I said this on the radio for those that missed it. Like, I'm good. Like, I always want to win, but I'm good. But I warned people, and I warned it on the air, the result of this game or the way the game starts and the way the game unfolds could change my view on it. I mean, look what happened to the Braves. For those that are not aware, the Atlanta Braves, who may well be done, had a huge lead, multiple huge leads against the Diamondbacks. They had a 6-run lead in the ninth inning. They gave up 7 runs in the ninth, and they lost 11-10. They had a 10-4 lead in the ninth. Obviously, as much as I say, I'm good with a loss, I won't be good losing that way. And let's be honest, it's kind of how the Mets lost. Let's count the ways that the finale of this four-game series against the LA Dodgers sucked. Let's count the ways with missed opportunities. Yes, Pete Alonso set the tone early. Yes, Starling Marte. Yes, they're up 4-0. Even Brett Beatty with a sacrifice fly. But after that, this team had 100 different chances to blow this game open. And then, I mean, I got so many, I don't even know where to go. Bases loaded, one out. Tough to get on Pete, but Pete strikes out. McNeil hits a weak fly ball to right field. Second and third, one out. McNeil again leaves guys on base. Marte gets picked off. I mean, there were so many moments in this game, and you could feel it. You could feel, especially when the Dodgers scored the 3 runs against Peterson in the third to make it 4-3, you could feel that those missed opportunities were going to kill them. Because the LA Dodgers are not the Rockies. The LA Dodgers are not the Pirates. The LA Dodgers are not a team that you can make all those little mistakes again and still win. Now, the Mets have done a great job against good teams. I'm not saying that they don't beat good teams. I'm merely saying when you leave a country on base, when you have a guy picked off third base, when you have scenarios like that, you're going to lose. You just are. The missed opportunities by this Met team throughout this game set you up to think, holy mackerel, this is going to end really, really badly. So that was issue number one. Issue number two was the defense, the little things, the tiny itsy bitsy things. Brett Beatty, and look, to the credit of Brett Beatty, he took full accountability after the game. But there is a little chopper to third base. I still have no idea how Andy Podgers hit the ball. Reed Garrett needed a strikeout. I thought he was going to get one. And Andy Podgers hits that little weak ground ball to third base. Runner on third, less than two outs. Obviously, that is the tying run. And Beatty's hesitation because Will Smith stopped can't happen. Get the ball to the catcher. Get it to Alvarez. Get him in a rundown. Doesn't matter what happens with the base runners behind. Get him out. And you have this slow motion train wreck where Beatty hesitates, then throws low, then Reed Garrett, to his credit, is right there to field the baseball and almost tag out Will Smith anyway. That would have been one of the most wild plays ever. We would have had a 5-2-1 out at the plate.
Yeah. Unfortunately, as my kid said, because my 7-year-old was sitting there dissecting the play with me of what went wrong after Beatty spikes it into the dirt and Reed Garrett turns around, catches the ball, and then Francisco Alvarez goes on to hug Reed Garrett rather than allow him to.
Yeah. Alvarez being in the way was not ideal. I don't think it would have mattered in fairness. Like, I don't think they were going to be able to pull that one off. This is just about Brett Beatty. And I heard Brett Beatty's postgame. Basically, he said it was a, He took all the blame. He explained what was going through his mind on the Will Smith hesitation, but he said cannot happen and he needs to be better. And Beatty's defense has mostly been good, but those little tiny itsy bitsy things, you can't make that mistake. And he did. And Reed Garrett deserves blame. Like, we all love Reed Garrett. He's been amazing. He was a magician two nights earlier, getting out of second and third, nobody out. You have a 2-run lead, can't walk the leadoff hitter. Can't happen. Give up a base hit, okay? Give up a home run. You cannot walk Mookie Betts to start that inning. You just can't have it happen. Then he gives up the base hit to Will Smith. I mean, he put himself in that situation. And then worst of all, the worst possible thing from that eighth inning, yes, they give up the lead. Yes, it's a tie game. You're an out away from at least keeping it tied, and you're facing arguably the worst hitter in the sport right now in Michael Conforto. And on the first pitch, Conforto rips a game-winning hit. That's really what elevates this game from a bad loss to like a cut-your-balls-off loss. You let Michael Conforto, who's been scrubbing it up this year and scrubbing it up in this series, you let him beat you? I'm sorry. That's just, maybe I'm a little irrational right now. That one is a tough one to swallow.
Well, what did we talk about in game one when we were watching the game live? It was the one thing, I don't care. Let Ohtani hit all day. I do not want to see Michael Conforto doing anything to walk off or help the Dodgers beat us. We don't need another former Met to be a Met killer. And by the way, I don't know about you, all I could do was laugh when Conforto actually got the hit. I couldn't even yell. I couldn't even get upset. I just laughed.
I laughed because if you believe in jinxes, if for those that are out there that do, I ultimately jinxed the Mets on so many levels in this game. So many levels. Some you don't even know about, I'll reveal now. Obviously, I did mention that on the air, Evan and Tiki, I did say before the game started, you know what? If they lose, no big deal. We got the season series. I got called out by a lot of people on that, including Jason, who writes, Jason, Evan and Pete, big fans of the podcast, been listening since the 2023 season. Evan, I blame the last game's loss on you because on the air, you said you were okay with whatever happens today, as long as it's not an eighth inning implosion. And look what happened. Of course, it was Conforto. Honestly, jokes aside, it's whatever. But I'm really sick of Francisco Alvarez. He got one good hit tonight, but this whole series, he's looked awful at the plate. At what point do we value his framing over Torrens' defense? As always, love the pod. Keep it up. Thank you, Jason. Yeah, I did say that. I said, I'm okay with loss as long as they don't blow up. But here's the worst part. There was something I said off air. And, you know, off air, I could delete. I don't ever have to bring it up, but I always want to be honest with you. I think it was in the fifth inning. I hit the talk back button in the studio that allows me to speak to the producer without it going on the air. And the producer is Tommy Lugauer. And I said, Tommy, I don't want to jinx anything, but Michael Conforto sucks so badly that no matter when he comes up in a game, I have the utmost confidence we're going to get him out. And as I say that, wasn't even Tommy, because he's positive, Tommy. It was me. I said, I shouldn't have said that. I should have waited until this series was over before I buried Michael Conforto. And when he came up in the eighth inning, all I could think about was my big fat mouth for even saying that. Even if we all fought it, don't let it happen. And it freaking happened. So,
yeah. And by the way, you have to know better. Because in the studio, there's no wood anywhere. You can't even knock on wood to be like, all right, I'll knock on wood. Conforto won't do anything. You got nothing. You're knocking on cement. I don't even know what you're knocking on.
No, you're right. Wood. You're right. Charlie Friedman writes, got a weird stat for you guys. In each of the four games in this series, the team with the least hits won. Yeah, that is weird. I think because three of the games could have gone either way, that part's not surprising. But certainly when you look back to game three of this series, and we know why it happened, walks, an error, the Mets were able to score six runs and only get four hits.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed. What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Charlie also writes, Pete Alonso is the star of the series, 7-for-16 with 3 home runs. The only other real option is Griffin Canning. And he also suggests that Ronnie Mauricio is the net negative, 0-for-8 with 3 strikeouts and a ground into a double play. Hopefully he turns it around next series. Let me get to Dan. Dan brings up something very interesting, and I wanted to go over this a few times to see if I agree with him. Dan writes, the McNeil play, everyone probably doesn't remember, but is somehow worse than him going 0-for-4 and leaving 5 guys in scoring position. Play he's talking about. Bottom of the third inning, just went up 4-0 into the third. Peterson's trying to get out of the inning and keep it 4-2. There's zero chance you shouldn't turn this against Teoscar Hernandez. And, of course, he's talking about the double play. Teoscar to ground ball to second base. McNeil shoveled it to Acuna, and Teoscar beat it easily. We have too many infielders that are better than him over there. Mauricio is great up the middle in 23. He cannot be playing the infield anymore or anywhere. If I have to see that idiotic backhand flip that takes an hour to get to the base, one more time. So I'm very mixed about this one, Dan. For those that want to go back and watch it themselves, it is the bottom of the third inning, first and third, one out. Teoscar Hernandez is up, and he hits a ground ball to second base. It is not a hard hit ball, but he hits it right at Jeff McNeil. Where I do agree with Dan is McNeil fields it. He is not close to second base, and he is shoveling it to Luis Angel Acuna. What he needed to do was very quickly whip back and make a strong throw to second base. You do not have time, and you're too far away from second to shovel it that way. So that part I agree with, but I watched it over and over again. I still don't think they turn a double play. I don't think it's the easiest, because it was a very slow developing play. and it wasn't hit very hard. But I get the critique in that, why is Jeff McNeil shoveling it when he's that far away? And I also get the critique that right now, between Mauricio and Acuna, McNeil shouldn't be playing second base. And I think what we have to do is, on a day-by-day basis, see how this lineup is constituted to know it. Like, if Mauricio, Beatty, and McNeil are all playing, and Taylor's playing center, McNeil should DH. The negative with McNeil DHing is you lose that versatility for him to play multiple positions, because once he's DHing, you can't put him in the field, because then you lose the designated hitter spot. And now the pitcher will be forced to hit. So that's the negative with DHing Jeff McNeil. But I get your point. You want to put your best defense out there. I thought Ronnie Mauricio at third base looked very comfortable in the time he was out there. I was also surprised that we saw Beatty play second with Mauricio at third. More on that with this email from Jimmy. A lot of info in this Jimmy email, and we'll get to a lot of other stuff, including the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series, but he's going to hit a lot of stuff here. Quick mention on Tyler McGill. After a putrid first inning in game two, he didn't pull a McGill. He gave the team some length, shut LA down. We're seeing him mature, trusting his fastball and cutting down on the walks. I sent an email a few days before Carlos Mendoza moved Soto and Alonso down a spot. I suggested Mendy pick the bat that would benefit most in the two-hole. Without going through the numbers of Marte and Nimmo, you like to speak of the eye test. What do your eyes tell you? Isn't Nimmo a different hitter near the top of the order? Longer at-bats, more walks, more production, less first-pitch swings. I think Hoff would even have to concede. He's a different hitter at leadoff or in the two-spot. I'm going to give you the numbers in a minute. I haven't looked them up, but I'm going to easily find them. But I do agree. While I did not like the move, and I still don't like the move, I cannot deny that both Marte and Nimmo have looked significantly better in the two-hole. They are getting better pitches to hit, which makes sense. I mean, they've got protection from Juan Soto. It is benefiting them both greatly. Cannot argue that. Do I still prefer Soto 2, Alonso 3? Yeah. But the trade-off is, it is certainly helping those two guys. I'll give you the numbers in a minute, but let me finish his other thoughts. In game three, Mendy pulling Mauricio, inserting Acuna at second, and moving Beatty to third base seemed odd. Acuna is a better defender at second, but I don't know if Mauricio needs a defensive sub. I assume Mendoza wanted to get Acuna playing time and Mauricio a couple of innings rest, considering he's building his way back up to being an everyday player. I do think that's a factor. They've mentioned that, so I think that's a part of it. I've been sending emails about wanting Mauricio to play third base because of his glove and arm. Mauricio had a play at the plate earlier in the series, identical to Beatty's play in the eighth inning on Thursday. Mauricio made a perfect throw and handled a smooth rundown. Beatty double clutched and bounced the throw. Physical errors are a part of the game. They're hard to swallow, especially when they can cost you the game, but I can accept it. It does support my argument. When Mauricio plays, he should be the third baseman and not subbed for defense. I want to see more of him before I can give you my definitive answer on that. I think so far he's looked good at third base. Mendy's made it clear that Mauricio right now is more comfortable at third than he is at second, which is why we saw Beatty at second, Mauricio at third. It was more about that than anything. But in terms of comparing the defense of Ronnie Mauricio and Brett Beatty, I would just want to see more. Now, here are the numbers when guys are batting second. Juan Soto is no longer doing it, but when he was batting second, 247, 816 OPS. So not great, not terrible. Brandon Nimmo, 8 games batting second. He is hitting 360 with a 1,008 OPS, 9 for 25, home run, 3 RBIs. So, yeah, he's doing pretty well in that two-hole. It's been working for him. Starling Marte, 4 for 16. So not anything that jumps out at you, but there you go. But certainly in the case of Brandon Nimmo, he has benefited from it. Mark Vientos has also batted second. We're not going to see that for a while with him going on the injured list. I got that one wrong. For those that were listening or watching the previous Rico Bronya, episode 492, we did a little live. You know, we reacted to the 10th inning live and then did a post game. And when Vientos went down, I said, oh, that's just an embarrassment. Like, he tripped. He's not hurt. Well, he is hurt. The good news is the injury is not that severe. He'll be shut down from 10 to 14 days, and then he could start revving up again. So I think July 1st may be a reasonable time we see Mark Vientos again. This does create an opportunity for Ronnie Mauricio. It does create an opportunity really for everybody when you think about it. Even Jared Young sort of gets an opportunity out of it for now. But it sucks because I really do think it's important to get Vientos going. I'm not giving up on him because of the first 2.5 months of the season, or whatever it is now. I guess really 2 full months of the season. So just a really bad break with Vientos going on the injured list.
Real quick.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you have Vientos come in, say, July 1st or whatever it is, now you have 1 month until the trade deadline. There's so many pieces right now that I feel like it's an audition for everybody.
Yes.
Because
it's an open competition, I think.
You have so many assets that are here in the majors right now. A couple guys still on the IL, like Jesse Winker hasn't come back yet. I'm almost confused. Like, I don't even know. Do we have enough bullpen arms? I feel like there's too many position players.
It's fluid. You know what I mean? It's June. So right now, the way things are situated at this moment, Ronnie Mauricio is going to get a chance. He's got to perform. He did not have a good first series. I'm not burying him, but he looked overmatched. It was not good for him offensively. Let's see what he can do. Let's see what Brett Beatty turns into. Brett Beatty didn't have the greatest series in the world. Like, what is Brett Beatty? Luis Angel Acuna had some really good at-bats in the finale of this series. He's got a month without hitting. So the Mets have a lot of names and they have a lot of options, but it's going to be about performance. And that's why I can't tell you what July 31st is going to look like. I think center field seems like a position that makes a lot of sense to upgrade because Tyrone Taylor is what he is. He's a very useful player. I like Tyrone Taylor. I think we all do. But is he an everyday center fielder? Probably not. You can get away with it when the rest of your bats are clicking, which is not the case right now. But I think center field is like an obvious, hey, nothing's going to happen internally in the next month and a half. So it's either what we've been seeing, which is Taylor in center, a little Jeff McNeil, or they're going to go out and trade for somebody. I think third base, second base, bullpen arms, it's all fluid. Like, I don't know what we're going to be saying about all of those positions as time moves on. I don't. I do know this. I know that you can celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Brogna. Enjoy responsibly. I want to play something for you guys if you missed it during the days of late night Met games. It was a Steve Gelb's report that really jumped out at me. Juan Soto has gotten a lot of crap. He has not had a great year. We all know that. But one thing I heard about Juan Soto before he signed here, and I've certainly heard more stories about it since he has signed here, is that he's one of the most hardworking guys in baseball you'll ever see. Even in the Mookie Betts podcast interview that Pete Alonso did, Pete was asked about Juan Soto, and the first thing he said is, that guy is all about baseball. That guy is all about the game, the sport. It's all he cares about. And so I forget which game of this series it was, but Steve Gelbs came back, filed this report about Juan Soto. And I want you guys to listen to this if you haven't heard it. Another impressive story about Juan Soto and how hard he works. Take a listen.
So, Gary, how about this? One of the things that Juan Soto really wanted to work on this season was his throwing. He thought it could get better. And so this spring, the Mets actually put him in the pitching lab for a day and gave him a full evaluation the same way they would any pitcher. They figured out that his throwing motion was pretty messed up. And Jeremy Hefner then gave him a routine, a throwing program, essentially, to work on every single day. He's done that every day throughout the course of this season. Now, even though he's felt like his mechanics have gotten more efficient, over the weekend he was telling Hefner and Antoine Richardson, the outfield coach, that he still felt like he was cutting the ball a little bit when he was throwing it. So they gave him one of those balls that they give pitchers to visualize the track of the ball. And when he is out there warming up in between innings, you see it right now, if the white in the middle of the baseball is on a line right in between those two black dots, then he knows he's getting behind the ball properly when he's throwing it.
Think about this for a second. Think about this. Juan Soto signed a $750 million contract, and he comes into spring training and says, I got to throw better. And they send him to the pitching lab. I think that is a great story because it reminds you and it should make you feel good that this guy did not get his money and say, I'm good to go. He got his money and he's working at his craft. I've said this all year. He hasn't hit enough. His defense has actually been really good. He made a couple of good plays in this LA series, that one in foul territory where he almost went into the stands. And look, his throws have not been great this year, but the idea that he knows that's a point of emphasis and is something he's working very hard on, I thought was very cool. So I thought that was a very, very interesting story. Let me read some more of your emails, and then we'll get to the I'm the man now star of the series and the net negative. Jared writes, the Mets are soft. Guess how many wins the Mets have when losing going into the ninth inning? Zero. This team has no fight in them. Things get hard, they roll over and die every time. Of course, it would help to have corner infielders that know how to throw the ball 12 feet, but I digress. I can't watch this team go down 1-2-3 in the ninth inning. This is why they can't hit with runners in scoring position. They're soft as bleep, and as soft as bleep, teams don't win World Series. I read this from Jeremy or Jared, I'm not sure his name, because I think he's nuts. I think he's nuts. I do not think the Mets are failing to hit with runners in scoring position, which has been a problem all year, because they're soft. There's nothing about this team that reeks of softness. While they may not have a lot of bottom of the ninth inning comebacks, they never feel like they're out of a game. They don't. Like, even in this game, the finale of this series, Tanner Scott struck the first two guys out, was ahead of Francisco Alvarez, and he got a base hit. And all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, are we going to rally here? You go back to the Tylor Megill game. Tylor Megill gives up four runs in the first inning, and they fight back. So I don't agree that they're soft. I don't agree that they roll over and die. I think that's the opposite of what they are. In fact, as we sit here today with the Mets in first place in the National League East, it feels like most of their losses are close games. Most of their losses are games that could go either way. So I don't think that's fair at all. The net negative to me is either one of two people. It's either Ronnie Mauricio, and I know it's tough to pile on the kid. He just got called up, but got called like it is. He was 0-for-8 with three strikeouts and a double play. I mean, I can't sit here and tell you otherwise. The other option's Brett Baty, because while Baty did drive in a run in game four of this series, giving them a 4-0 lead, he overall did not have a great series offensively. I think overall 2-for-13. And of course, he made the error that really killed him. So Hoff, I'm going to give you the choice here because I am very mixed on those two. The net negative is Ronnie Mauricio or Brett Baty. Who should be the negative?
It's Ronnie Mauricio. He did absolutely nothing. There wasn't anything he did. I mean, defensively, he had his moments. You could see he's got an arm. He could play okay. But offensively, donut.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Ronnie Mauricio, welcome to the major leagues. Welcome back. We're so glad to see you. You're the net negative. And hopefully that changes. I want him to get an opportunity over the weekend against Colorado. Keep this in mind about Ronnie Mauricio. He, throughout his entire minor league career, so this is not new, this is not just recent, this is his career. He's a better left-hand hitter than right-hand hitter. It's the way it's always been. And unfortunately, he had a lot of at-bats against left-handers. This Colorado series will feature two right-handed starting pitchers in Sensatella, who's going to start the Friday game, and Marquez, who's going to start the Sunday game. So hopefully getting 8 or 9 at-bats, hopefully, against right-handed pitching will help Ronnie Mauricio. Let's see if they can get his bat going. The Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series is very easy and very straightforward. So before we get to the obvious, let's throw out bouquets for some others, for some other people who may deserve it. Like, for example, Griffin Canning. Griffin Canning gave them 6 scoreless innings against the Dodgers. Even David Peterson. David Peterson gives up 3 runs in the third inning and still goes 7 innings. And we know how unique it is for a Mets starting pitcher to go 7 innings. So I think David Peterson deserves honorable mention. And dare I say, Tylor Megill. I mean, 6 innings, 4 runs would be a tough sell, but we talked about it earlier on this podcast. It was so important to get innings, and he gave it to him. Juan Soto was only 2-for-13, though he did walk 6 times. Francisco Lindor hit the home run in game 1. He scored a couple of runs in game 2, scored a run in game 3, and battled through the poor injury on his little pinky toe. Brandon Nimmo had some big hits, but ultimately it is an obvious choice. It is a landslide choice. It's the first time this guy's won the award in a while, but it will be his team-leading 5th Rico, I'm the Man Now star of the series, and that is Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso was 7-for-16. He had 3 home runs, 9 RBIs, had clutch hits all over the place, including the finale of this series when he added the insurance run that we thought was going to be important, and then they lost 6-5. He was great. And we're not even mentioning the scoops, because there were plenty of Pete Alonso scoops throughout this series. Pete cooled off for a bit. He is back. He is back, and he is back with a vengeance. And when Juan Soto gets intentionally walked ahead of him, which I get why managers do it, Pete Alonso makes him pay. So Pete Alonso wins the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series for the 5th time. The standings in terms of who's won it the most, Pete's won it 5 times. Francisco Lindor has won it 3 times. Brett Beatty has won it twice. And then you've got singular winners like Jose Castillo, David Peterson, Oscar Brazoban, Brandon Nimmo, Juan Soto, Tyrone Taylor, Francisco Alvarez, Kodai Senga, Max Kranich, and Edwin Diaz. So, congratulations all around, but Pete Alonso with a monster series against the Dodgers.
Azucar didn't win one at all. I thought we almost like nominated him.
Azucar, is that what you said?
Yeah. He didn't win one?
I think we talked about it, but I don't think he ever actually got it.
One thing we do have to talk about, dude, and we didn't really touch on it so much. Shohei Ohtani has played all 7 games. Do you know how many times he struck out in the 7 games versus the Mets?
A lot, because the Mets did a really good job against Shohei Ohtani. What were the final numbers?
12 times.
Did a great job. They did a great job. I'm not ready to declare that they have figured it out on him, because if we see Ohtani again in the postseason, I'm not going to have that confidence. But they very much attacked him. They were aggressive against him too, which was not the case in the NLCS last year. They did a great job against Shohei Ohtani. So credit to Jeremy Hefner, credit to the lab, credit to all the arms that attacked him. No doubt they did not get destroyed by Shohei Ohtani in the 7 games they played against LA. And honestly, here's what these 7 games mean. They don't mean a lot, truthfully. Like, head-to-head in Major League Baseball, it's not telling you anything. Like, I already know the Mets are a good team. I think we all know the Mets are a good team. I don't think they need to go out and beat good teams for you to know that they are a good team. You want to beat the Dodgers because they are a rival now, because they feature all these big superstars and they're, you know, basically kissed by the media on a daily basis. But 4 out of 7 against LA doesn't prove that the Mets are better than them. It doesn't even prove that they can compete with them. I already knew they can compete with them. The Mets got better than last year. The Dodgers are, they're good. They're not fully healthy right now, but I could say the Mets aren't fully healthy right now either. We haven't seen Sean Manaea pitch. The thing that was important to me wasn't proving they could beat the Dodgers. It was winning a season series, because tiebreakers matter in this sport. They matter to make the playoffs, like we saw last year. They matter in terms of home field advantage, and they also matter in terms of getting a first-round bye. A very under-the-radar thing happened. Pete Alonso was on the podcast with Mookie Betts. I listened to the whole thing, and there were some interesting things that I think we'll play in the next couple of days. But one of the things he revealed about his wife being pregnant is he wouldn't say the due date. He just said, well, you know, we're threading a tight needle, or however he phrased it. Basically, Pete Alonso's wife is due the first week of October. And Pete didn't want to say it because I don't know. And listen, as a father, if Pete Alonso has to miss a playoff game for the birth of his child, God bless him. I mean, come on. It's a birth of your kid. Like, I'm not going to be that crazy. I hope most people out there aren't going to be that crazy. But the reason I bring this up is because that's why winning the division matters. If they win the division and they get a first round bye, that whole week is free if his wife's water break and the baby comes. You know what I'm saying? So some are suggesting that the reason Pete Alonso had such a big series against the Dodgers is he knew this and said, boy, we better get that tiebreaker against LA because God forbid we're tied for the second best record in the National League. We need that bye. But jokes aside, obviously, tiebreakers matter. And that's why this series was important to me, not about proving anything to the LA Dodgers.
Yeah, well, it's funny because to go back to the family thing, it is amazing that he started to hit once he announced that his wife was pregnant. Like last year, we talked about the money being like a main factor and he had a terrible season. This year, I mean, he's got 55 RBI already. I mean, last year, did he finish with 80? I mean, he's almost about to blow past that number.
He's having a wonderful season. He really is. He slowed down, which is natural. You weren't going to hit at that same 350 clip the entire year, but he's gotten hot again. And he's got a great opportunity this weekend. The whole team does. Three games against the Colorado Rockies. The bare minimum is 2 out of 3. Obviously, losing a series to Colorado feels disastrous, though the Rockies are getting hot. They swept Miami. But when you look at Sensatella, who the Mets beat up at City, when you look at Palmquist, who pitched well for a few innings, and then they finally got to him. When you look at Marquez, who's been awful this season, this is a get-right spot. Not that the Mets are getting wrong. They have lost 2 out of their last 3 games, but a get-right spot in terms of clutch hits, in terms of scoring a lot of runs, and in terms of trying to add to what is a lead right now in the National League East. They did a great job beating the Rockies when they had to beat them last week. Let's see if they can keep this going. Because right now, they are a game and a half up on the Philadelphia Phillies. And it would be great to leave the weekend further up on the Philadelphia Phillies. It'll be Senga, Holmes, and McGill for these three games. Paul Blackburn is now available out of the bullpen. And so the way I see it right now, if the Mets want to keep everybody with just one extra day of rest, Senga, Holmes, and McGill would have the extra day of rest. Actually, let me take that back. McGill would not. So Senga's pitching with an extra day of rest. Holmes is pitching with an extra day of rest. And then McGill would be coming back on regular rest to wrap up this road trip and series in Colorado. Then they have an off day on Monday, and then they have 3 against Washington, 3 against Tampa. Canning, extra day of rest. Peterson, extra day of rest. Senga, extra day of rest, all against Washington. Holmes, extra day of rest against Tampa. McGill, extra day of rest against Tampa. And then either they can come back with Canning on regular rest or reinsert Paul Blackburn or insert Frankie Montas. They have to move on Montas in about 2 weeks. Pitchers get 30 days to be on a rehab assignment. So Frankie Montas could have been, I mean, Frankie Montas can be activated whenever the heck they want. It's not like they have to wait. He is coming off a bad start at AAA. I don't know how much that's concerning to the Mets or if that's just, no big deal. But 30 days is the number of days you need to be or the maximum amount of days you can be on a rehab assignment. Montas's first start was on May 24th. So he's got himself another 2.5 weeks if the Mets want to take their time. Just to give you an update on that. So they can stick with this rotation now going into the finale of the next homestand if they just want to keep guys on an extra day of rest. But now we got to factor in Sean Manaea, who I know the Mets are going to take their sweet-ass time with. His clock is going to begin on Friday, June 6th, because he's scheduled to make a rehab start, his first one against Brooklyn. Assuming there are no setbacks, assuming the Mets want to take their time, they've got 30 days to activate him. So you're looking at the first week of July. Potentially looking at the series against the New York Yankees. We'll see if that's how they want to handle it. So it's a good split against LA. It was a horrible end to this series. I think there are 2 games in this series that go on the big board, the big list of worst losses of the first half of the year. But you know what? Give it time. We'll reevaluate this in a month. At the All-Star break, we'll reevaluate it. We'll see where we're at. Any comments? Of course, you can email us to RicoB@gmail.com. There's a lot of things I do want to get to in the next few days besides breaking down the Colorado series. The Mets made a huge announcement. They are bringing back Old Timers Day. They've rebranded it as the Alumni Game. Want to spend some time on that coming up on the next Rico Bronya. And obviously, we'll break down Mets Rockies and some early looks at potential trade targets for the July 31st trade deadline. So a lot to do. Thank you very much for listening, subscribing, and hanging out on episode 493 of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.